and welcome to the podcast. This is a special episode. We have a great guest joining us, Sabrina Rogers Anderson, author of A Fantastic Sex Life and How to Get It. But before we get started, I want to tell you about Rhone Jewelry. And today's episode is brought to us courtesy of RhoneJewelry.com. I want you to check them out. They have great gifts for that special lady in your life. You can find them at RhoneJewelry.com. That's R-O-A-N Jewelry.com. Check them out, because when you support them, you support the show, and we can continue to bring you all these great guests, all these great topics and content that you enjoy week in and week out. And I also want to remind you to subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe by going to Stitcher Radio, and on Stitcher, you can find us at RobAguilarShow.com. If you are on iTunes, you can find us at TheRobAguilarShow.com. You can also find us on TuneIn at RobAguilarShow.net, and on SoundCloud at RobAguilarShow.us. And also, we are now on Radio Free Brooklyn, so you can listen to us live every Monday night between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can simply go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com and you can listen directly on the website. Or if you have TuneIn and you have the TuneIn app on your phone, simply add us as your favorite. So make sure you add Radio Free Brooklyn as your favorite on TuneIn, and you can listen to us live every Monday night between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So you have plenty of channels where you can find us, where you can subscribe. I would also like to invite you, if you're on Android, you can download our app by simply going to the Android store in the search box, typing in Rob Aguilar Show. That'll take you to the app, download it, and you can listen to us all the time, on demand, whenever you want. You can listen to old episodes, the latest episodes, and this way you will stay always up to date. So make sure you support RhoneJewelry.com. Make sure you subscribe to any one of those channels that I mentioned, or just go and download our app. So stick around. We have lots of fun things lined up. You do not want to be left out.
From A1 Studios in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, New York, this is the Rob Aguilar Show.
Joining us today, all the way from Sydney, Australia, Miss Sabrina Rogers Anderson, author of A Fantastic Sex Life and How to Get It. Sabrina, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's nice and early where you are right now.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
9 o'clock in the morning, bright and early. It's 7 p.m. here on the east coast of the U.S.
I'm in the future. It's actually Thursday here, so.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That is awesome. So how are things looking in the future?
Yeah, pretty good. It's nice and sunny over here. I guess it doesn't mean much for you guys. So
I want to dive into this great book. And what I really like about this book is the no holds barred approach, straightforward, none of that old school fluff that we're used to, love yourself and all that kind of nonsense. This is pretty straightforward on how to achieve a great sex life.
Yeah, well, that was my goal really with this. I wanted to, we kind of wanted to bring this part of a series, of course, which is called And How to Get It. And basically, we wanted to bring the self-help genre into the new era, you know, update it a little more. And yeah, I just really wanted to, you know, like forget the old style of sex books. I don't know if you've read like any of them in the past, but anyway, you know, they tend to be a little not stuffy, but not as conversational and as relaxed as I wanted my tone to be. And I just wanted to address, you know, people in a real way, because honestly, it is an embarrassing topic for a lot of people, and people worry about it so much and stress about it and stress that they're doing things wrong. And, you know, it's supposed to be fun, really. So all I wanted was to just help people relax and take it easy and enjoy themselves.
With regards to the old school way of thinking, I grew up with, you might know who she is, Dr. Ruth.
Yes.
I was a teenager when she was on the radio here in the States. And she kind of, I guess for that time, had a very progressive approach because she was funny. But it, at times it also became very It sounded like you were at a medical seminar.
I mean, she, don't get me wrong, she was a pioneer. She's like wonderful at what she did and all that. But yeah, that's the thing. I think, you know, most, I worked for FHM magazine here for a couple of years. I had a column called Ask Sabrina. So young guys would write in and ask me questions about sex and dating and stuff like that. And I think especially young men, young women as well, I don't know, do they really want to get their sex advice from an older lady? I mean, not to knock her in any way, but yeah, I think maybe that's a bit of a different approach that I brought as well, is to kind of be younger, fresher approach maybe.
Why do you think it is that it becomes embarrassing, or why has it always been embarrassing to talk about sex to the point where couples have a difficulty expressing what they like, what they expect?
That's a really good point. It's funny. You'd think that when you're in a relationship with someone, you'd be comfortable enough to tell them what, you know, what's on your mind and how you feel and what you'd like and what they're doing wrong. But people are, you know, even the most open people can be quite embarrassed and uptight about sex. And I think it's because, I don't know, there's just so much stigma around it, whether it's from back in the day, we used to think it wasn't Christian or holy or whatever, right. You know, and now maybe it's a holdover from those days. I don't know. But I think we still get really uptight about it. And I think that's what I'm trying to break down a little bit, you know, to open up those lines of communication, whether it's with your regular, your long-term partner, or even if you're single. You know, that can be really hard for a single person to be able to express what they want or to have satisfying sex, because it can be really embarrassing to tell a casual partner or someone you don't know that well or a new partner what you want. But it's all about gaining the confidence to do that and knowing what you like and being, overcoming that shyness and those barriers. And I think it's entirely possible at any age and no matter what your relationship status is.
Would you say that, let's say as a single person or as a single man, would you say that we should work possibly as bettering ourselves with confidence, and then that would give us the ability to be more comfortable?
Absolutely. Around.
The thing is, I think as single men, you, and I want to touch, and we'll go into married couples, and we'll go into relationships that have been together for a long time. But I guess we'll start a little bit off with being single and the pressure. And I think a lot of single men feel this pressure, the pressure to meet the woman's expectations. And here you are as a single man, you think you know what she wants. And our objective is always to want to please the woman. You want to please her as much as you can, because it makes us feel good when we know that we are satisfying the woman. But since we're all different, maybe what one partner likes may not necessarily be what the next girl that you might meet at a club or a bar and you end up going home with her, she might not like what the last girl liked. So it's always that pressure to want to perform well.
Yeah,
that I think drives men crazy. So maybe if you do you suggest working on yourself first, so that no matter what, you can adjust to whatever your
yeah, absolutely. Might want. You nailed it. Pardon the pun, but you really did. that's exactly right. And I think I worked with young single men for, like I said, you know, when I was doing that advice column, and that's probably, and I worked at askmen.com before as well, and like so I have a lot of experience with. Giving advice to single men. And that is the key thing. You'd be surprised, you know, like most people think that guys would write into me and ask all these like raunchy sex questions. No way. Guys wanted to know how to please women. They want to know how to get inside their heads and what to do. You said it exactly right. And I think that's the thing. You're correct in saying that it's not the same for everyone. So if you do work on your confidence and do just try to feel good about yourself, then that'll shine through and make you better in bed, I think, if you're just a little more relaxed about everything. Because it's normal to want to please, but you can't expect to be perfect at every single time. And like you said, everyone's different. So if you do feel more confident about yourself, I think that will definitely help you in the bedroom. That being said, there are certain techniques and skills that you can have, that you can learn, that will likely please almost everyone. So, I mean, it's not to say that, you know, everyone likes the same things, but I think in my book I do touch upon a few ways that you can go about, you know, giving oral sex and things like that, that will actually are very likely to please most women. So yeah. And then from there, once you have your basic technique down, you know, you can get to know the person, and really it's all about communication, like I said. And I think having that confidence to say, you know, how is this? Are you enjoying what I'm doing? And asking the woman that you're with for feedback. I mean, that it can be embarrassing to do that, but if you have the confidence to do that, then she'll tell you and you'll know where to go from there. So that's a very good point you made.
And if you have the confidence, I guess, even before you ask, there are women that are very vocal. She might say, not exactly like that, but maybe like this. And I guess if you have that confidence, then you're not going to take that personal.
That's right.
And you'll adjust to what she likes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because you can't possibly know what every person likes. It's impossible. And it's really, you know, it isn't personal if she tells you. You should take it as a good thing, because honestly, she could just be lying there and hating what you're doing and not telling you. So if she tells you, that's golden. From there, you're just going to be able to improve. And then, you know, it's just going to get better.
But that communication part is also something I think that is very difficult to conquer. I think a lot of people have, just in general, humans have a difficulty communicating. I mean, we can think of historically so many wars that could have been prevented worldwide if people had that skill to communicate.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I think that's also something that people can benefit from your book. You touch on how to tell your partner what you like, what you expect, or what your expectations are.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's very key and very important. Not only, I guess, in sex, but in general as an element important to the relationship.
For sure. And, you know, you've got to give yourself time as well. Like, I wasn't the most confident person when I, you know, like when I started this whole this whole journey. Yeah, I think we're all shy in our own ways. You know, you can be outwardly a very confident person or seem very confident to the outside world. But, you know, how you are in the bedroom is completely different. You know, some people can, and it can go the opposite way as well. Some people can be very shy and they can be like, you know,
animals in the bedroom.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, that's it's not a guarantee. Either way, you know, that's the thing. You've got to give yourself some time. And that's what I tell especially young single guys, you know, like, don't try not to put too much pressure on yourself and give yourself time to build up that confidence, because you can't just overnight become this really experienced, like, amazing sex god. You've got to just, like, take your time and try not to put so much pressure on yourself and tell yourself that, like, the girl that you're with probably she's not an expert either. So just, you know, if you're both young and all that, just try not to relieve a little bit of that pressure and try to relax and have some fun, because we'd spend so much time worrying about what we're doing and stressing. And yeah, you've got to take a step back and try and enjoy it.
If you can't enjoy sex, then what can you enjoy?
Yeah, that's so true. But you'd be surprised. So many people, I think they just, it's really easy to get really up in your head about it and think about it too much. And just worry that you don't have those skills and techniques down. But like I said, you know, got to get to know each person. But I think, yeah, I definitely give a few tips in my book that I think will at least give some basic skills to people so that they can go out there and be like, okay, I know what to do. I know where things are. I know where to start. Right. It sounds silly, right, but a lot of people, I think, are a bit confused as to how to even go about it. So yeah, I think if you get those basic skills down, it's a really good starting point.
Yeah. And I guess if they don't know where things are, then luckily for this generation, you can always do a Google search for images. And
the internet kind of is your friend, that's for sure.
And you can figure out where things are and then get back to learning from your great book. So now, continuing with the whole communication aspect of things, communicating fantasies to your partner, that is also something that I think is difficult, because one might be afraid that we might be judged, or that our partner might think, wow, this is way too crazy. How did you come up with this strange fantasy? Is there such a thing as a fantasy that could be way too strange? Or how would you advise someone to handle such a situation?
Well, I think you have to start off slowly. Definitely on the first date, you know, keep those, like, wildest fantasies of yours in the vault. Keep it till later. I think you can start off, you know, in my book, I explain the difference. I see three levels. There's your sexual needs, your desires, and your fantasies. So your needs are what you need to be met to enjoy yourself and feel secure. So, I mean, you should feel that your sexual needs are met at every sexual encounter. So, you know, even if it's a casual one-night stand, whatever, you have the right to feel like your sexual needs are met, which means that you feel secure and enjoy yourself. And if, you know, if you're not feeling like good about having sex with someone, then you should not have sex with them again. Simple as that. Your desires, I think, from the way I see it, is something that you, it's like a fantasy, but something that you would really like to have fulfilled. And fantasies are the higher level, which maybe you don't necessarily want to go through with. You know, sometimes fantasies are, can stay in the realm of fantasy. They can stay in your head. You know, perhaps you dream, like, you'd love to have a threesome, for example. That's your fantasy. But you know that going through with that fantasy would actually ruin your relationship. So perhaps you can just vocalize about it. For example, when you're having sex with your partner, you can, like, just pretend there's someone else there and talk about it. Or, you know, you could watch a movie together, like an adult movie together, and pretend that the star of the movie is there with you. You know, you could play with it as a fantasy without actually going through with it, because sometimes I think there are certain things that, while you would love to actually experience them, perhaps it's, you know, depending on the nature of your relationship, perhaps it's best to leave them as a fantasy. So that being said, when you do actually want to communicate your desires and your fantasies to your partner, I think, you know, you take it slowly. Start with the, you know, at the beginning of a relationship, you're getting to know the person. Start with the basic stuff. You know, it's good to say what, you know, your basic desires and stuff. But I think if there's, like, kinkier stuff you're into, just wait until you're into a relationship that's more stable and you're more comfortable with the person so you don't freak them out. And then when you do want to tell them about your fantasies, pick your moment. Don't, like, tell them when they're running off out the door to go to work or something, you know. Just sit down with them at a relaxed time and just be playful about it and try and tell them in a lighthearted way and see how they react. You could get a really bad reaction or you could be surprised and it could be really good. And then maybe you'll be able to try something new together.
That whole expressing your fantasies has always been a tricky thing for a lot of people. And I've heard horror stories. And you touched on, for example, a threesome.
Yeah.
Where a guy might tell his girlfriend or his wife, you know, I'm thinking about a threesome, or even fantasizing about a threesome, even if we don't necessarily go through with it. But a lot of the times, some women, and maybe that comes back to the confidence aspect of things that we spoke about a few minutes ago, mm-hmm. where the woman might feel intimidated that perhaps maybe she is not fulfilling her boyfriend or her husband's needs, where he feels he needs to bring someone else into the picture. That might not necessarily be the case. It just, like you said, it might just be strictly a fantasy because we saw it in a movie, or it's just been a fantasy period and nothing more. So some women, I think, might not take that too well. And I think that's where sometimes men kind of close up and don't speak up about their fantasies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. First of all, I think women need to understand that, like, the threesome fantasy is a fantasy that, like, I'd say 99% of men would have. It's a fantasy. You have to try to not feel, you know, women have their own fantasies as well. You have to try to not feel that it's anything negative against you, and it doesn't mean you're not fulfilling him. But that being said, I guess the thing about threesomes, I would suggest to most people, look, unless your partner is really open, your wife or your girlfriend, it's probably not going to happen with them. I would try and get that out of the way with people you don't know that well. Honestly, if you really want to make it happen, it's probably best with, like, two people you know casually that you don't really have any ties with, because it's a game changer in a relationship. It just is. Jealousy can rear its ugly head. Even if you decide that, you know, you talk about it with your partner and you say, yeah, we're cool with it, it could really drive a wedge between you. Unless you're, you know, some people are really open, and that's awesome. If both of you are willing to give it a go and you don't think it will impact your relationship in the long run, and your girlfriend or your wife is open to that, more power to you. Why not? But fact is that most women will probably feel too jealous in that kind of situation. So if that really is a big fantasy of yours, I encourage men to to get that out of the way before they like settle down with a girl for the long term, unless she's a very open-minded girl, which is, right. I mean, there are people, you know, some people who are really into all sorts of things. So you could be lucky enough to find someone who will be willing to do that. But I mean, you know, and then if you do, I highly suggest just talking it through. If you are going to go through with something like that, talk it through all the details of it before and the boundaries and how you feel about everything so that it doesn't ruin your relationship after the fact. Because, I mean, that's the thing. It is very touchy. People's emotions get involved and you'd love to. That's why I say with the fantasy thing, unless it's something that's really, really important to you, if your partner's not up for it, I wouldn't suggest pushing it too hard, because if you care enough about them, it could just ruin your relationship. So maybe let it go. But if it's something that's really, really important to you and you'd prefer to find someone who is into that, then maybe it's time to move on.
I agree 100%. Now, my thing with threesomes is when I was single, I've been married now for 3 years. But as a single guy, I was just always intimidated, like we spoke earlier about me being able to meet the expectations of one woman, let alone adding a second woman. and it's just, it would seem like so much more work.
Yeah,
you know,
that's so a very good point. You know, I think the reality of it is probably not half as good as what guys imagine in their heads.
Some people kind of go by what they see in porn.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of what you see in porn is not necessarily what will happen in a real live threesome.
No,
I would think.
Yeah, that's very, very, very true.
Because I mean, that's all pre-rearranged. There's a script. There's a director that's telling them what they need to do, and I don't think it would probably play out as perfect.
No, probably not. And you know, yeah, that's exactly right, which is why sometimes fantasies are best left as fantasies. Just like if you go through with it, you're probably going to ruin it. But you know, you can still play around with that, like I said, with your partner, just verbalize about it while you're having sex and think, you know, like use it as a fantasy, because fantasies sometimes can be just great to play around with without actually. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in saying that it's just not going to happen like in your favorite movie. No.
No, someone's getting left out at one point or another.
There's a good chance.
There are so many, I guess, other fantasies that people can maybe act on that are not necessarily going to have a negative impact in the relationship. Maybe like I knew a couple who would go out to the supermarket and pretend that they were strangers and that they met there at the produce aisle and then went back home. You know,
that's
things like that.
One. I love that.
You could do things like that. And that, I don't think anyone would get their feelings hurt in that one. You know, you're just two strangers in a supermarket picking up produce and groceries and
exactly.
You met there and let's go home.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I always laugh because I suggest in my book to go to a bar and pretend to be strangers. But I always laugh when I think about the Modern Family episode where Claire and Phil meet up and Phil's wearing that name tag. Anyway, yeah, you don't have to do it as cheesy as that, but you're right in saying that. There are many things you can do. Like, you know, they can be simple things like that, or things like, you know, maybe a little bit of like light bondage. You can tie each other up with little scarves or little fun stuff. You know, it can be fun and kinky without being extreme. And it can just add a little bit of spice without things like taking it out of the bedroom. I think sometimes we get a little bored, you know, it can get stale in a relationship after a while because we do the same positions in the bedroom every night. No, not every night, sorry. Oh, we wish. But same thing over and over. And just to try and take it out of the bedroom, maybe try and have sex in the kitchen or outdoors or just trying to, you know, shake things up a little bit. It doesn't necessarily have to be anything major, like out of a porn, like you said. It can be just little things that you do that are exciting and add a little spark in your relationship again. And the thing is, like you said, when you're single, you have a certain vision of sex, and that tends, I think as a young guy, it tends to be based on porn a lot. But then when you get married, as you would know, things do change. And then if you have children, and, you know, that's why I do cover all these different stages of life in my book, because things do really evolve. and your priorities aren't the same as they used to be. And perhaps all those fantasies that you had aren't as a young single guy. They don't become as important to you, perhaps, when you're married and yeah, you found the person that you really care for. But, you know, it depends. For some people, those things do continue to be important. So, yeah, I think the important thing is to really learn to communicate those things in an adequate way, those fantasies to your partner, so that you do make sure that you don't freak them out. And yeah, just maybe you'll find out that if you do take it slowly and say things in a really non-threatening way and take it slow, I think you could actually find that maybe your partner is quite open to certain things that you're interested in. And yeah, it could actually open up new doors for you.
I wanted to touch now on something you said a couple of seconds ago about having sex every day. You hear so many authors and sex therapists and couple counselors or marriage counselors touch on the amount of sex that they all think a married couple should have. Some say 3 times a week, 4 times a week, 2 times a week. Can we put a number on how much sex a married couple should have in order to still have a sexy, healthy relationship?
No way. There is no way you can put a number on that, because first of all, everyone's different. Every couple is different, and couples go through different phases. You can go through a phase where you're have sex often, and that can be for various reasons. Maybe you're not stressed at work, you're on holidays, or you have more time as a couple. It can be a whole variety of reasons. But then you can go through a bit of a dry period, but that doesn't mean anything. When you're with someone for the long haul, you have to accept that those periods are going to happen and that that's completely okay. And you've got to take the pressure off your shoulders to think, oh my God, we haven't had sex in 2 weeks. Oh, that's like, you know, our relationship's going down the drain. I mean, someone's completely dissatisfied with the amount of sex that that they're having in the relationship. Like one person's not happy and one, you know, say wants to be having sex a lot more than the other, then yeah, that can be a problem. And, you know, perhaps a discussion needs to be had. But, you know, if both people are just, you're busy, you're tired, you're stressed with work, it's okay. Like, relax about it. I think this pressure to have, oh, I shouldn't be having sex 3 times a week, no way. Like, I mean, just to give you a personal anecdote here, I had a baby 9 months ago, and I have sex way less than I used to.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I don't usually discuss that when I'm discussing this book, but yeah, I think just to give my personal opinion on this, you know, I have sex way less now because you're tired and sleepless nights. You've heard it all before, but I used to think, oh, to be honest, before I had a baby, I used to think, oh, you know, people are just lazy. They've got tired, schmired. You've got to, you know, make the time. And it's like, no, it's not. Life's not always like that. You've got to give yourself a break and accept that. Hopefully, if you're in this for the long term, there will be ups and downs, but it doesn't mean that if you're having sex a little less often for a little while that your relationship's going down the drain. No way. As long as you're still close and you feel that the bond with your partner is still there, then just go with the flow. Like, it's okay. You know, I think this just putting a number on it, and then that makes people feel inadequate, I think.
I can totally relate and identify with what you're saying. My wife and I actually had a baby 9 months ago as well.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And he'll be 10 months in a couple of days on the 29th.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it's a great coincidence. He was born July 29th.
Oh, mine was August 12th. We're very close. Oh, what's his name?
Yeah, his name is Robert.
Oh, lovely.
Robert D. Aguilar. And he was actually, the doctor said his due date was August 10th.
Huh.
He came 2 weeks earlier.
Wow.
But I can totally identify with what you're saying. The sleepless nights. I mean, you know exactly what it's like. Feeding him every 2 hours at night, those first couple of weeks.
It's crazy.
And it is. And it is life-changing. It's our first. So And maybe other couples who are listening who have had a child or who are planning to have a child. For us, it definitely brought us together, more together. You get that sense of, well, we're a family now. We have this child that now depends on us. And we were emotionally, we were definitely, without a doubt, brought together. But the physical, the sex part, of course, you have less sex. But I personally, I always try to, even though we were having less sex then, to still have a certain level of intimacy, whether it be holding her at night while we were in bed, caressing her hand, caressing her hair.
Aww.
You know, kissing and things like
because that's very nice. That's you're so right. That's great.
Thank you. Because I think if you don't have the time to have sex, at least you still have that intimacy that is not necessarily conventional, typical sex that we think of, you know, penetration and all that stuff. But it's still intimacy, you know, hugging someone, kissing someone. So that's, I think, the approach I tried to take in order to compensate for us not being able to have sex because, you know, we're too busy with the baby.
That's a great approach. I mean, I completely relate to what you're saying. And it's funny because, like I said, this is actually the first time in an interview that I've brought up. I usually stay very detached from it and don't, like, bring up my personal experience. But it's changed me completely to, like, I used to be, again, you know, personal anecdote here, you know, I used to think of myself as a bit of a sex kitten and, you know, the lingerie and do all this stuff. And I thought, I'm always going to be that way. I'll always make the effort for my husband. Now it's like, man, sometimes I look at myself in the mirror. It's been 3 hours I've been up. I haven't even looked at myself in the mirror yet. I'm like wearing crappy old PJs, things I told myself I would never do. I'm always going to look good for my husband. Oh my God, things change. But you're right in saying that the intimacy and the connection we have now, I loved what you said about now we're a family. Well, and you know, that bond is there. It's true. Things change completely, but that's okay. And you've got to like exactly what you said about doing those little things that create that intimacy. Like you will, the first year of having a child is so intense. Like, you know, my baby doesn't sleep at all at night at the moment. And it's like, I'm up all the time. But you've got to give yourself a break and know that that's not going to last forever. And you will become your, you know, you will find yourself again and you'll find yourself as a couple in the future. And you will have sex again more often. But it's like, you've got to take a little bit of that pressure off. Like if you're going to start stressing yourself out that you need to be having sex 3 times a week when you have a new baby, man, forget it. It's impossible. And you're just going to end up like I said before, that feeling of inadequacy. And that's what I don't like about saying absolute numbers and things like that. As long as both of you are feeling okay with where you are in your relationship, that's all that matters. And the intimacy is still there and you're happy. Well, there you go. You've got everything you need. And in the long run, well, hopefully you'll be able to, you know, once the kids are a bit older and you're starting to get more sleep again, then the sex will come back. And you've got to trust that, let things happen in their own time.
I think, well, you touched on something about, well, maybe not dressing the way you used to before or the lingerie and all that. It's pretty interesting. And I'm the same way. I always keep the personal stuff separate from the show, but for some reason I feel comfortable at this moment talking about it, maybe because you were sharing a similar experience. We're in the same boat, so to speak.
For sure.
With regards to with the whole what you were saying about being sexy or the lingerie and all that, I don't know, but personally, when I was in that delivery room with my wife and the baby was being born and I was there and I saw everything, I participated as much as I could in the whole process of the delivery. And for the first time, I want to say that I completely saw her in a different light. And I think a lot of women go through this afterwards where they're not doing the sexy thing anymore with the lingerie and the getting all spruced up and all that because of the baby or they don't have the time to do so. But I think the women need to know is that, and this is with other guys that I've spoken to, they kind of all share the same idea or something along the same lines, is that I saw her in a completely other light where I saw her strength, you know, as she was pushing. And my wife is very much into health and she's a runner, she's a marathoner. And,
wow, we sound very similar, so am I.
And she said, I am going to commit to not taking any of the painkillers, any of the drugs, or she didn't want to be induced.
Good for her.
we had a midwife. We didn't use a doctor or any of that. Originally, we wanted to have a home birth, but I wasn't comfortable with the whole thing. So we ended up having it at a hospital with a midwife. But I saw her push and her strength and her resilience, and that she had her eye on the prize, that she was going to deliver this baby. And that, to me, was so sexy. I can't explain it. But
you're
other
giving
guys...
me goosebumps. That's such a nice thing to say. That's like amazing. That's like what every woman would love their husband to say.
And other guys, other buddies of mine that kind of the same age and we all went through the same thing, feel the same way. I always ask them, well, did you tell your wife that? Oh, no. I said, well, dummy.
Yeah.
You need to tell her.
Yeah.
And that probably goes way back to how men are kind of brought up differently, where we don't talk as much as women do. And we hold a lot of things in. And then the days after the baby was home and I would see my wife come out of the shower, I found her just as sexy as before. It didn't change anything. And I think men need to convey that to their women, that, okay, well, maybe you don't have the time to get all dressed up. You don't have the time to go shopping for some new lingerie or putting that all the makeup on or whatever you did before. But what you did and giving birth to that child that's ours and the strength that you put into that, that's sexy. And I think men don't say that enough.
That's really, really nice to hear. Seriously. Like, and I think that's so true. And if I can say from my point of view, watching your partner be an amazing dad as well, and like it's the same to me. It's like a new sexy now. It's like it's on a different level. I mean, we may not have sex as often, but you know, the bond is so much stronger. And yeah, I think what you just said is really, really like such a nice thing, and I really encourage men to definitely tell their wives and their partners if they feel that way, because it's hard. Confidence takes a hit, and you might not feel sexy after having a baby, and some women struggle with losing the weight, or you know, it's tough. So I think that, yeah, just knowing that, if you can tell her that, you know, that'll make her feel like $1 million. So that's really nice.
I totally respect the sacrifice that women go through when they give birth. They're essentially putting their life on the line, if we can say that, for this child. It's the most beautiful thing. I'm just enjoying this aspect of our relationship now. Yeah, and then once we go through this, I know that without a doubt, I'll rock her world like we used to.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You've
got to give yourself a break. Like, you've got to just enjoy where you are, where you're at in your relationship, and like, it's being a parent, a new parent, is so much pressure. I mean, it's got its extreme highs and it's got its lows as well. And you've got to you can't add the pressure of how many times a week you're supposed to be having sex on top of that. Like, come on. Like, you've got to just enjoy where you are and this stage of your life. And then, like you said, you'll get back to, or maybe you won't get back to where you were before. Maybe it'll be different in another stage, and that'll be great as well. And it's like, it's interesting because it's something you can't really anticipate. You can't really imagine it. Before I was a parent, I really had no clue about how I would feel about this. Like I said, you know, it was like, no, I'll always be like meeting my husband at the door in lingerie and doing all this stuff. And it's like, I mean, maybe I will again in the future, but I'm not doing that right now. But that's okay. You know, like, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. And that's another thing that I think with other books about sex, they tend to, or advice columnists or whatever, you know, different people tend to try to give this absolute advice. And I just think that that's why I tried to target each group of people, because I haven't been in all of them yet, because, you know, I also talk about older couples and older single people and all that. I'm not there yet in my life. But I talked to as many people as I could from each group, and really trying to get inside people's heads and see what those different issues that they face are. And that's a thing, you know, like I couldn't really understand what it would be like, what my sex life would be like, or how I would feel about her, how I'd feel about my partner as a parent until it actually happened to me. And I think that that's maybe the downfall of certain, you know, advice books that are out there is that they just maybe try and give a one-size-fits-all kind of thing, you know? And it's, you can't do that. You've just got to, each stage of life is totally different. And each person is different, of course, but you've just got to like try to accept that where you're at, as long as, you know, no one's unhappy or dissatisfied, then that's okay. And just go with the flow.
You have heard like other sex therapists or sex experts throw out numbers like, oh, you should at least be having sex 3 times a week.
Yeah. I find that insane. They're like, there's no chance for me at the moment. So I'm totally honest. Like, yeah, it's so, yeah, no, I don't think that there is, everyone's different. People have different sex drives to begin with. Some people are like highly sexual people who want to have sex every day. Others are, some people are happy to have sex very little, like, or they'd be happy with once every few months. The thing is, hopefully you found a partner that's compatible with you, because that can be an issue if your sex drives are at the basis are different. Hopefully you're with someone who is similar to you. If not, well, you know, that can cause issues, but hopefully you can arrive at a compromise there. But there's no numbers. Like, that's insane.
I researched that number because I was very curious. And so I looked at different surveys and different statistics, and it didn't coincide with what the experts were saying. You know, couples that both worked and no children in the household. On the average, at least here in the States, we're having sex maybe, and the number was kind of weird because I guess when they average it out, 1.5 times a week was like the real number.
Well, I think that's not bad. I think that's pretty good if you're doing it. 1.5 times a week.
Yeah, one,
it's a funny number, you're right.
Yeah, it was. But I guess when they averaged everyone that they surveyed,
that's right.
That's the number that they came up with, which is actually half of what these experts were saying.
Yeah, so, it's funny because that's right. There's no, and like you said, it's even without children, it can 3 times a week can be hard. Like, you've got other stuff going on in your life. You can't just. And I mean, maybe sometimes you will go through periods where it's 3 times a week, and that's great. But, you know, it's up and down. It's not like, I really completely disagree with putting that amount of pressure on people. See, this is the kind of thing that I think sex can unfortunately be a stressful business for people. Like, really, those kinds of things, those kinds of pieces of advice and putting absolute numbers like that, just serves to stress people out and make them feel inadequate. It really doesn't help people at all. Like, I think you should be looking at helping people feel happy and satisfied, not telling them, oh, well, if you're not having sex 3 times a week, then, yeah, you're really failing. Like, oh, good, okay, make people feel like failures. Anyway, I just, yeah. Yeah, I think that's not the way to help people relax and feel good about their sex lives, you know, like, because it all ties into what you were saying before. It's about confidence and feeling good about yourself, and because how can you have a satisfying sex life if you're stressed about it and you're not feeling good about yourself? It's impossible.
And that is why I find your book fascinating, because it is realistic. It is very today, what people actually are going through in daily normal lives of this modern era that we're living. It's a different approach. And that's why I think it's very unique, and it's very important that people go out and get the book and read it and really grasp everything that you are trying to show us and teach us. It's very important. I think it's almost life-changing, and people are going to have a new outlook on their sex life. Thank you so much. You're welcome. I'd just be very, very honest.
Yeah, well, I really tried to, like I said, I talked to so many people in writing this book. I interviewed a whole bunch of people, from friends to, people that were referred to me. Like, I just, and hearing all everyone's stories, you know, like, I put a lot of testimonials in there, because just to show how sex is a different experience for each person, you know, like, it's not cookie cutter, and that's the thing. I think hearing each person's different point of view that I spoke to was really enriching to me, because it really made me, I guess it's funny in a way, geez, I'm really getting deep with you here. Like, to be honest, most of my like interviews, I just, because most people are interested in talking about the nitty gritty stuff. Like, okay, so how do you spice up your sex life? And how do you, what are the good sex positions? And like, so I just stick to the like purely like, you know, sexy stuff and don't get into all this. But I find it really interesting to touch upon all this because I think maybe that's an, when I tell people I wrote a sex book, they think, oh, okay, she wrote like this guide to being dirty. But it's like about, I think it's about so much more than that. So I really appreciate that you see that aspect of my book because I really tried to put that human side of it in there with all those testimonials, people saying, you know, these are the issues that I faced, or, you know, whether it's a young guy who's like, yeah, I want to have lots of sex, but I'm really shy to go out and meet girls, all the way up to an older person who's like, you know, since I hit menopause, I've had hormonal issues and that's affected my sex life. Like, I found that really interesting to talk to a whole cross section of people and to realize that everyone faces issues at some point and that there, but there are ways to overcome that. And that's, I tried to attack each one of those issues and offer solutions to that based on all the people that I spoke to and what they told me they went through. So yeah, I think that was really interesting. It's great that you saw that aspect of my book. It's wonderful.
There's a very human aspect to sex, a very emotional part of sex where you always hear people, yeah, it's only sex, nothing emotional about it, no strings attached. And that may be okay and that's fine. But I think that there's some sort of chemical reaction that takes place that it's not just simply sex. There's always human emotion behind it. Mm-hmm. And just think of how one feels after sex. You get that warm and fuzzy feeling. And that's like a chemical reaction taking place. So it's very human. So although sex can be very animalistic, very instinctual, we're acting upon instinct, but there's also feelings and emotions involved. And I think that your book shows the human aspect of it, like everything you just talked about with a woman who reaches menopause and that chemical change that's happening in her body as well. Mm-hmm. So we miss that aspect of sex sometimes and we don't understand it. And I think in order to have a healthy sex life, you need to understand at least a little bit of how that human side, that chemical reaction, that aspect of it works. And if you understand that, then you can kind of maybe have everything fall into place. I don't know if that kind of makes sense, but
for sure.
In my own weird way, that's how I view the human side of this book.
No, for sure. And it's interesting because I think there can be, when you're young and single and say you're a young guy and you're out having a good time and you don't want to settle down yet because you're like, say you're in your early 20s and you want to play the field, and then go for it. Why not? You know, that's, enjoy that. Enjoy that no strings attached sex. Enjoy that. As long as you're not hurting anyone along the way, hopefully, you're enjoying that. Go for it. I mean, I think certainly it's important. Well, I wouldn't say it's important to play the field, but, you know, I think we have the advantage nowadays of not getting married and settling down when we're 21, like, you know, in our grandparents' day. So you have time to date a few people and get to know, you know, find the right person for you before you actually settle down, you know? So you don't necessarily have to do that super early now. You can take your time and date a little bit and find the right person for you. So if you're young and single, men, go for it and like do the no strings attached. And it doesn't have to be a super emotional thing. That's fine. And, you know, I do really, like I said, I've worked men's magazines for quite a while. And I think I do like to help young guys. But even then, I was really surprised by the number of times that young men would write into me saying, asking a lot about how to please women and how to get the girl. Like often, you know, you'd think they wanted to just nail as many women as they could. No way. Like so many of the questions were like, oh, I'm really into this girl and I just don't know how to get her and all this. So yeah, I mean, like you said, there are emotions attached to sex 95% of the time. I think probably maybe all the time, but, you know, some people are in a phase in their lives where they're having detached, emotionless sex or no strings attached, and that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that and being in that phase, and some people maybe prefer that for their whole lives. You know, maybe there's a proportion of people who stay detached. If that's how they're happy, that's fine. But then, yeah, I think as you go along in your life and you reach different stages, you settle down with someone, you get married, or perhaps you don't, you're single, you get older, there's all sorts of different emotions attached at different stages of your life to sex. And I think it's about figuring out those issues and those emotions and what's going to make you happy and lead you to have a satisfying sex life at those different stages of your life.
I completely agree with you. I think guys, when they are in their 20s, they would love at least to be able to nail every woman they see walking down the street. But the trouble is that they have trouble approaching one woman, let alone trying to nail everything in sight.
Yeah.
And I
back
think
to the confidence
down,
issue, right?
Back to the confidence issue. I was just going to say that it all, I kind of like how this all worked out, because we started at the beginning of our conversation with the confidence issue, and we kind of made for it full circle and came back to the confidence issue, where if men learn that confidence early on in their life, and then I think they would be able to truly nail every woman that they saw and wanted to, because I think that women are attracted to confidence. And
for sure,
if you work on being confident from the beginning, then getting the girl you want is just kind of like a byproduct of, you kind of get it by default, just because you have that confidence. And you always hear that women want someone that makes them laugh, but yet they feel safe around. So essentially, what women want is a clown ninja or something like that, which
I like that,
which is difficult, you know. So all these pressures, and it's just, I think, the way we're wired. Once we think we've conquered everything, or we conquered a particular stage in our lives, then bam, we're already into the next stage, and now and you can't go back. Mm-hmm. So now you have to conquer this new stage. But it's all, I guess, how you view it. And again, having that confidence, I think, is very important.
You know, I used to, I'm actually Canadian originally, and I used to work for AskMen.com in Canada, and yeah, like, they make a big business out of helping guys, this biggest men's website in the world, like thousands of articles online, and helping guys on all various aspects of their lives. But the basis of what they do is try to help guys be confident. That's at the basis of everything. But I mean, isn't that what we're all searching for? Everyone wants to feel confident and be able to go out there in life. But it's everyone's biggest struggle, isn't it? Like, even the most confident looking people, the people that seem the most sure of themselves, you'd be surprised, like, underneath that veneer of confidence is often really shy or self-conscious person. And I think some people really learn to put themselves forth in a confident way, but that doesn't mean that we all have our insecurities. So,
sure.
Yeah, I think you really, it's interesting. You said it at the beginning of our interview, and you really nailed the central issue to it all from go, like, because that's exactly what it all comes down to. And yeah, I mean, it's hard because when you're young, you're not confident. Like, you know, I look back when I was in my early 20s, my gosh, I was so unsure of myself, and I wouldn't go back to that time. Oh man, it was so stressful, constantly worrying about what people thought of me and what I was going to do with my life and where I was going to go. And it's not easy, you know, like, you're young and you've got everything on your side, and you know, that's the prime time, I guess, to be having great casual sex or...
Oh, for sure.
but like you said, it can be hard if you're not confident enough to go out there and, like, actually get the girl. And yeah, so I think that's the first port of call, is to try and find ways to be more confident in yourself, for sure.
I would go back only, and this is a big only, if I could go back with all the knowledge that I've acquired throughout the years.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way though, does it?
It doesn't work that way. I would rule that era of my life if I went back with all the knowledge that and experience that I've acquired from then till now. And but yeah, it doesn't work that way. The best that I can do, I think, is teach everything I've learned throughout my life to my son, so that hopefully, he has and grows up with that confidence.
That's a great goal.
Does great things. Yeah, because everyone talks about we should leave a planet, and this is just my own weird funny humor, but everyone talks about leaving the planet better for our children. But how about leaving better children for our planet also? You know, no one ever talks about that.
That's a good one. It's so true.
I think parents have the potential to, I mean, here's a brand new human being with all the potential in the world, and it's up to us to mold it into the right shape. And yeah. It's important. I mean, we can make this child to grow up to be a great human being, or we can totally screw it up and this kid will have issues for the rest of their lives and we're the ones to blame.
Yeah.
As parents. So I always try to put big emphasis on that. Let's leave great children for this planet also. Let's not forget about that. We don't want our kids to spend years in therapy
trying to get themselves fixed up. I certainly hope not. No, for sure. That's very true. And yeah, I guess that is right. You can't go back in time. You can't go back to when you were younger. And I mean, but the one thing you can do, yeah, is pass it on. I guess pass your knowledge on. That's a really good goal, I think.
With that being said, this is a great book that I encourage everyone to go out and buy. A Fantastic Sex Life and How to Get It. Sabrina Rogers Anderson. Thank you so much for taking the time to conversate with us. It was a lot of fun. We got really personal and I enjoyed that. And I know the people listening will also enjoy it. And they're going to go out and buy this book.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks so much for having me. It was really great talking to you.
And we'd love to have you on in the future when we talk about more fun things.
More sexy stuff. Sounds great to
me. Absolutely.
Anytime. Awesome. I'd love to.